Hey all, this is Brady Dale with some notes about the activities that the World Exists crew is up to, recorded a little bit early this week because I'm away for the holidays. So, Hillary Ray and TJ Hurley are in a new sketch that you can view on YouTube from Slacktory called You Know That Guy from Christmas. You can find it at hillaryray.com. It's one of her most recent posts, and it's by local comic Aaron Nevins. Definitely worth checking out. Couple of shows. I think I got these wrong last week. Sorry about that. Eric Thomas is going to be at the Adobe Cafe on January 2nd for Accidents Will Happen, a show by Bradley Beck. Like I said last week, there's some chance I will appear at the open mic after that as well. And who knows, DJ comes to that one sometimes too, so maybe you'll see us both. That show will start at 9, and then on January the 8th is when Second Stories presents The Apocalypse. Jamie Fontaine's ongoing show will go up at The Dive, 947 East Passyunk. That show starts at 7 o'clock, and you can see R. Eric Thomas and TJ Hurley in that one. I think TJ's in it, as well as friends of the show like Valerie DeMambro and Larry Napolitano, who've been super supportive. So yeah, that's definitely a worthwhile one to go out to at The Dive. Also, the last one, Adobe Cafe, that's at 1919 East Passyunk. So all excellent South Philadelphia appearances. And then one last thing for folks to know about. If you go to the worldexists.com website, that's theworldexists.com. One of the more recent posts, I've put up a trailer from this new movie, This Time Tomorrow. And I'm excited about this movie because the character in it shows up at a real First Person Arts story slam. And as it happened, I was the host that night. So I bring him up on stage and make a little joke at the end of his story. And it was cool to be a part of the making of that movie. And another local storyteller, Martha Cooney, also appears in it briefly, which is also nice. And when I was thinking about it, Hillary Ray was at that slam too. And I think, interestingly enough, that might have been the first night that I ever met Hillary. But I'm not 100% sure about that. But anyway, this movie's out. You can order it online for whatever price you want. I bought a copy for $6 digitally. You can buy a DVD for $5 and they'll mail it to you. So you should do that and support independent filmmaking. It is not your normal little rom-com. So worth seeing. Anyway, hope you enjoy this upcoming story. And please do keep those comments coming on our iTunes page. We really appreciate it. And stop by and leave your stories at theworldexists.com. Welcome to the World Exists podcast. Before we get started, I want to say a thank you to all of our new listeners and subscribers out there. And I want to let folks across the country know that I have a dream for this podcast sometime this next summer. That if folks are interested in this, I'd love to hear you talk to me about it, like email me through the website or give us comments or something along those lines. But I think I'm going to make this happen. I plan to take this podcast across the country sometime next summer and do shows with folks in different towns across our great nation. So if you think that might be cool and you think you might be a performer who'd be good to be an episode on this, to be in an episode of The World Exists, you should reach out to me and let me know, because I might like to work with you. Though I'm not making a promise, because I don't get along with a lot of people. Cool. So we're going to turn this over to Hillary to tell you how the show works.
The World Exists is a roundtable storytelling podcast for all of you out there. We'll have one person taking the lead with a story, and the rest of us will talk about it along the way.
Make sure you know the folks who you're here with today. Again, I'm Brady Dale. You can find me on Twitter at Brady Dale.
I'm Jamie Fontaine.
TJ Hurley.
And Hillary Ray.
Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. So I am going to kick us off this week. So my story starts with the Atlantic Monthly magazine. And in my college years, which were in the late 90s, I don't ever actually remember subscribing to the Atlantic Monthly, to be honest, but I got it for years, and I got it so consistently across multiple moves that I actually got to the point where I just started sending them change of address forms whenever I changed address, because I never paid for it, but I kept getting it. And I was like, that's cool. I mean, I'll keep taking it. And actually, it wasn't the only magazine that I got like that, because I may have subscribed to the Atlantic Monthly at least once. I could believe that I would have done that because I subscribe to a lot of pretentious magazines. But I know for absolutely certain that I never subscribed to FHM magazine, which, if you guys don't remember, is like the cheesiest men's magazine of the 90s. And I got it consistently for years as well, and it would follow me from address to address. So the reason the Atlantic Monthly is important to this story is, you know, when I was in college, I was young enough to still think that spies were really cool, but I was getting old enough and lefty enough to be skeptical of anything the American government did in terms of foreign policy. And the Atlantic Monthly published an essay sometime in the mid-90s that was all about, it was from the perspective of a former CIA operative who wrote about how the agency did a really crappy job of collecting intelligence. And the reason it did a crappy job is it had all these poor incentives for inspiring people to be informants around the world. And they got a lot of bad intelligence. And so his point was that really the CIA just didn't work. And we wasted a lot of time and money to supposedly protect our security when really it didn't.
I hope to chime in there. I knew two guys when they were in law school, two brothers. They both wanted to be lawyers. And they also both wanted to work for the CIA. That was like their dream in life. But they also were both addicted to methamphetamine. And one night they decided that the first big step they were going to take in living their dream to be a spy was that they took a high on methamphetamine. They got one guy's laptop and they decided they're going to make their car a spy car. So they got into the car and they took drywall screws and screwed the laptop into the dashboard of the car to make it into a proper spy car. And they were not accepted into the CIA. So if the CIA wonders why it can't get good people, it's a little too judgy.
But they are lawyers, right?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds
they
like lawyers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It, from what I understand, it's not as hard as everyone says it is, because I've met a lot of dumb lawyers.
Well, and I bet methamphetamines actually help you pass the bar, right? They may not help you get into the CIA, but...
They help a lot of things, not your teeth.
Yeah, okay. I don't know.
But
so
I got you off track, sorry.
No, it's fine. That was great. Actually, you'll see that what your story really fits into where we're going with all this, so it's good. So... When I was in college, you know, around the time that we started the World Exists podcast was the end of my activist career. I used to be a professional activist, and that started in college. And I was, you know, a campus hellraiser. I did all kinds of rallies and protests about all kinds of different issues. I went to more meetings than I went to probably more meetings than I went to classes, and I never skipped classes. So I went to a lot of meetings. So that was my life in college. And I thought I was interested in international relations, and now I couldn't give a shit about the third world. But at the time...
Fuck them.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. They don't
this
even
is the
have...
first world, motherfuckers.
Exactly. Right. That's my perspective.
Can we change the name of the podcast to The First World Exists?
I think we should. Yeah, I think we should. But I was a real bleeding heart in college and really cared about this stuff. And... So I have some visual aids, and I'll put these up on the website. But one of my first really big activist coups, like one of the best things I did kind of on my own in college that I was really proud of, was Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North came to our campus to speak, and we paid him. I went to Cornell. We paid people shitloads of money to come talk on campus. We probably paid him $50,000 in like 1997 to come speak to us, at least. I'm sure. I mean, I don't know what the amount was, but... I know we paid that much to other people. So he came to speak on our campus for a lot of money, and I knew I didn't like the guy. So I got together with this grad student who was also a part of an organization called the United Progressives, and we sat in her office, and we made this little program, which I'm holding up here, and I'll put up on the website. I actually managed to find one of these today. And it looks like, if you just glance at it, it looks like a regular program that you would hand out before an event. But if you start reading it, like it says world freedom in the Reagan era, ? And if you open it up, it's all of these things about the shitty stuff that both Oliver North did in the whole Iran-Contra scandal and how that worked, and also how that fit in with a larger story of American interventionism around the world.
for those of you that can't see this, freedom is in quotation marks a lot.
And just to be clear, you made this.
Yeah, I made it.
To hand out, yeah. To trick people.
Me and another, I don't remember her name anymore, but a really great grad student who I worked with. We did it together. But I did most of the raw research on it. It's copiously, you can tell like a college student did this because it's copiously footnoted on the back.
Yeah. But the front looks exactly like my senior musical theater recital program.
Yeah.
And I wish someone had come into my recital with like propaganda complaining about what songs I was singing.
No, it was a lot of fun because I did most of the work to make it along with this other grad student. And then we got a few other activists just to stand at the doors and hand them out. And we ran out of them, so we didn't make as many as we needed to because the room ended up being packed. But people totally took them. They didn't give them they didn't hesitate. You know, it wasn't like, what's this crazy stuff? They're just like, oh, a program, sure. And I had lots of friends tell me who knew that I was doing this that, you know, they were sitting in the audience and they heard people saying things like, I don't think this is really the program. As they flipped through it. But yeah, so it has, it explains, just really quickly if folks don't remember, what the Iran-Contra thing was. So what it was there was a law, the Boland Amendment, which said that the American government could not give money for arms or aid to insurrectionist groups around the world. And the Reagan administration believed that the Contras in Nicaragua were freedom fighters, even though the people who they were fighting were democratically elected, the Sandinistas, but they were a leftist government. They believed in really scary things like universal literacy, and the Reagans didn't like universal literacy. And so they sold a bunch of weapons to Iran, and then they used the money from the weapons to give to the Contras in Nicaragua. And so that's why it was the Iran-Contra scandal, because it was a way that Oliver North came up with to get a bunch of money that would be off the books that they could give to the Contras.
Everything I know about the Contras, I learned from NES games. So where did the aliens come in?
And what does Joe Strummer have to do with this?
I honestly don't know who Joe Strummer is.
Are you kidding me?
No.
From The Clash?
No, I'm sorry.
What?
That's okay, because I don't know any of the current events or events from 1997 that you were speaking of right now.
So I did this. I handed this thing out. And one of the coolest moments of this for me was they didn't always do this before big lectures on campus, because I went to a lot of the big lectures. But people knew that Oliver North was controversial, especially in a lefty town like Ithaca. So the dean of students, I believe she's the dean of students, she was some dean, got onto the mic before he started and just gave everyone a reminder of what the code of conduct was on campus and to like not disrupt his speech and that we're an academic environment and, you know, we need to hear from everybody. And what was cool was as she was giving her remarks, you could see that like she was holding our flyer in her hand, and it was like that was what she had like written her little notes to say on, and she like had it up there with her, and we were like, yeah, yeah. So anyway, so it was a cool event, and this became like making fake programs kind of became my little thing on campus that I like to do. I remember doing it 3 times. This was my first big success at it. I did it another time when I was off campus and other people handed it out, so I wasn't a part of that actual event. And then the third time I did it, it sort of leads us to our story. I continued to be really anti-Central Intelligence Agency. And it wasn't a big issue on campus. I didn't have to deal with them very often. But in my senior year of college, they came to campus to recruit people to come work for them. And I learned about it, and I learned, you know, it was a little bit hard to figure out where and when it was. They didn't, like, publicize it really widely. In fact, I think they just went to certain students and invited them to come, and I don't know how they came up with that list. But somebody I knew had found out about it, and they had forwarded me the email and that showed the time and place. And so I was like, I need to undermine this. I hate these people. They're really bad. And so I did my whole same song and dance, and I made another little flyer, though this time I didn't try to pretend like it was a program, because who would make a program for a recruitment and joint event? We just made a flyer that was obviously like, the CIA sucks and you shouldn't work for them. And so we went to this event, and it was me and this other girl whose name I've forgotten, which is too bad because she was great. She was this young woman who was known on campus as just like the She was like the activist girl that everybody loved because you could always count on her. If she said she was going to do something, she would do it, and she would do a great job, and she was always down for everything. And so I would put out the word. I was like, I'm going to hand out flyers at the CIA thing. Does anyone want to come do it with me? And she said, yeah, she was game to do it. And not only that, but she was so much more confident during the ensuing exchange that I had with scary professional killers. So what happened was we made this little booklet that said like a bunch of crappy things about the CIA. And I remember it both drew heavily from that Atlantic Monthly piece. So it said like, if you think it was like two sides, if you think the CIA is cool, you still shouldn't work for them because they suck. And it was like some facts about that. And then, you know, if you're a human being and you care at all about democracy, you shouldn't work for them for these reasons. And so we got there really early. So we would get there ahead of anybody actually coming. And we just stood outside the door and waited for people to come and hand them out. So obviously the first people to show up were the people who worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. There was like eight of them. And they all walked by us and just kind of looked at us as we were standing outside and like went into the room. And then a few minutes later, one of them came out and said, what are you guys handing out? And we're like, oh, we have these flyers about the Central Intelligence Agency. Here, take one. And we handed it to them and they took it and they went back in the room. And I actually, so I was, I kind of have my memory of this and then kind of the written story that I put out afterwards. And they differ a little bit. So I was a columnist for the campus paper at the time. And so I wrote about it the next day in the paper. I wrote about what happened. And there's a few things, the way I remember it is milder than I described it in that story because I went and found that old story today. So the way I remember it is there were two people, almost everybody was dressed in black, but there were two people who were like dressed in more black than anybody else. And it was this one like...
So they were the coolest ones?
I think so. Well, because I think it wasn't clear, but I think they were the operatives, like the actual operatives. So there was also analysts there, like people who just sat and stared at computers all the time. Like, so these two people came back out, and the way I remember it is there was this one very pretty, very petite woman I remember as having very funky blonde hair. And she came out and said, I really wish you guys weren't handing this stuff out. I'm really sad about it. And we were like, well, you're on a university campus and that's kind of how things work. People have different.
She said she's really sad about it.
I remember her.
And she's dressed like a goth. Yeah. So confused.
Yeah. I do remember her doing this whole sort of like, like trying this niceness thing. Like, oh, I'm so bummed out. You know, like.
Trying to be like, hey, bros, how's the dude going?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not the propaganda guys. I feel kind of sad.
Well, I just like that your response was, this is college. You should know this. Like, I guess I went to like pretend college, but just the idea that you would tell the CIA what college is like, how they best be ready for it.
Oh, yeah. I totally embrace the idea of a university as like an open environment in which like people debate and they disagree and they do it right into their faces. Like I still really believe in that.
And my guess is that young Brady was like a self-righteous loudmouth. maybe.
Can I add in one other thing? And I'm just going to be honest and admit this. I did not know that the C in the CIA stood for Central.
What did you think it stood for?
I don't think I ever even thought that it stood for anything.
Columbia, like in CBS?
I don't know. I guess I just always thought it was just the CIA.
It's all secret. That's a secret, too. Everything is a secret about you. You can't even know what our acronym is.
We're all going to be under watch by the government after this
episode.
Yeah,
thanks.
Well, so I clearly already was, which we'll get to that. And it's going to sound crazy for me to say it, but there's no other explanation for how this story ends that is that I was under watch by the government. She comes out and she's kind of bummed out about it. And then she goes back into the room. And then the other dude who's dressed in the most black comes out. And he is not a petite, pretty woman. He is, as I remember him, and I think this
woman.
He was like the biggest man I've ever dealt with and would have been a really ugly woman. But he was at least a head taller than me. Much broader than me. And I'm a decently broad guy. Like, and he was much broader. He had a beard, like this giant white beard. And he comes up to me.
Was he a biker?
He looked, yeah. He was like a CIA biker. He was a giant.
Sweet.
He was a giant man. And he comes out and he says to the girl, he's like, did you write this? And I said, no, I'm the one who wrote it. She's just helping me out. And so he comes over and he like slaps it down in my hand. And he says, this is bullshit. And you would probably be dead if it wasn't for things that I've done.
Are the Hell's Angels a part of the CIA?
Did we just uncover something that we shouldn't have?
Well, so I thought I was super smart at this moment because when I came, because I had been sitting around reading like books about how the CIA works and like all the shady stuff about them. So here's a fun fact about the CIA. The CIA is not supposed to do anything on American soil. They have no authority to do anything here. They can't spy on Americans. They can't. And of course they do it.
Can they have affairs?
They can have, yeah. They can, members of the CIA can have sex in America. They can't do any spying.
Just not with people that aren't their wives.
They just can't have sex with America. That's the line.
That's right.
How would you do that? Is that something you do regularly, TJ?
It involves the Statue of Liberty. It's weird.
You know, one of the things
we'll talk about it later
that is worth saying is CIA is like sort of a total institution, and they actually really encourage internal marriage within the CIA because if you marry someone in the company, as it's called, you're more likely to stay with the company. Like they don't want people to shift jobs out. They like once you work at the CIA, they want you to work for them forever. So he's like, this is bullshit. You would probably be dead if it wasn't for me. And I come back with him with my smarty pants college self. And this is true. I was like, well, I've never left the country. So if you've done anything that's saved my life, then you violated your charter. And
that's awesome.
And so then we kind of get in a back and forth. And this guy is so big and is so in my face. And important fact. Like, he's yelling at me. He's yelling at the woman goes to comes back out, and she goes to my friend, and the dude comes to me, and they're both being pretty aggressive. But neither of them ever introduced themselves, and they never asked us who we were either. Like, they never were like, you know, I'm whatever with whatever. What's your name? I would have happily said, but they just came out, like, guns blazing, screaming at us, and no names were ever exchanged. I would have been happy to give him my name, but it never came up. So then I was like, at some point the conversation came to how ineffective they were. And like, you know, you guys don't do crap. You don't successfully do anything. And they were like, no, we successfully do things all the time, but we just can't tell anyone about it. The reason all you ever hear about are our mistakes is because that, you know, comes out in investigations. But we can't tell people when we successfully save lives or prevent terrorist attacks because that would jeopardize our sources. And my friend said, so you're saying that you guys like stop bombings and terrorist attacks all the time. And they were like, yeah, we do it all the time. And she was like, so like, why would it matter if you told people that you had effectively done it? And they said, well, it would jeopardize our sources. And like, but if some dude was going to go bomb some shit and then like the bombing didn't work because somebody stopped him, don't they already know that somebody told? They didn't really have a good answer for that because the reality is the CIA sucks.
I mean, they could.
They're coming for
they
you.
They could know that somebody told, but not know who it was.
But they,
I think that protect the sources thing makes sense. Maybe this isn't the time to argue about this.
No, it's fine. You can. Now, I believe in an open exchange of dialogue. But I thought that was pretty smart on my friend's part, and I think she's right. So the CIA does not have a stellar track record. And then the best part, and this is one of the things I wrote about in my column was my friend also brought up. She was like, you guys sell guns and then give the money to drug dealers, because the Contras were widely suspected of selling drugs in America to pay for guns to fight the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And the woman said, no, that never happened. And my friend was like, how do you know? And she said, we've got ways of knowing. Well, the week that this whole thing went down, a big New York Times story came out that week. This was like October of 99. Big New York Times story came out that showed that declassified documents had revealed that the CIA had never even investigated whether or not drug deals had the Contras had been engaged in the drug trade. So they'd never even looked into it. So I don't know what their ways of knowing were. But what was really stunning about these people is that it was so obvious that they were indoctrinated people, and they were speaking from somebody else's script, and that it was that any questioning of what they did was threatening to them in a much deeper way than simply threatening, because if people believe this stuff you crazy lefties are saying, we'll lose our jobs. It clearly threatened them in a much more profound way than that, in the way that like when you meet people who are overly indoctrinated, like they're a part of a cult or they're a part of some really nutty religion, you realize that they don't really have control over their own words anymore, that somebody else is speaking for them. Like that was really the impression I got speaking to these people.
In retrospect, do you think it's strange how angry they got and how much they engaged with like two, what, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds?
I was stunned.
That's like, it's shocking that they didn't just ignore you. Like, to come, that seems strange that they engaged that much with two, like, college students handing out homemade flyers.
Right. I mean, we weren't blocking anyone from going in and hearing their presentation. We just had a little, just a little flyer. It blew my mind that we were taking that seriously. So
it must have felt pretty awesome.
I was scared out of my mind. I mean, I was virtually wetting my pants to be. I mean, this guy was huge, and he didn't say it, but I found out later that the guy who was yelling at me and was like screaming at me, at least represented himself in the event that followed as a legit operative. Like, he said things like, if you wanted to ask me if I have jumped off the top of a building and broken into a window to steal files, I would tell you that I have. You know, like, he said stuff like that.
He kind of sounds awesome.
Does the CIA have like a group of snipers that they have on call for situations like this?
I imagine, yeah. But they're not supposed to operate in America.
Yeah. So, which is why you weren't sniped.
Yeah. But so check this out. So eventually they left us alone. They went back into the room, and then the recruitment event happened, and so folks started filing in. And I would say like 20 people probably showed up for it. It wasn't a ton of people. And I personally knew about four people who were in the room. And so like they came, they're like, oh, Brady the Crazy Lefty, what are you doing? And I was like, handing out some flyers. They're like, of course you are, you nutbag. And I gave them the flyers. And then I approached some of those people afterwards, and I was like, did they say anything about, so then the event started and we just left. We were like, well, everyone's here. Our work here is done. So we just left. So we didn't stay and listen. I don't think they would have we were nice enough not to like come into their room and like listen to their thing. So we left, but I talked to everyone who I knew who was in the room afterwards. And I said, did they say anything about us? They're like, they made fun of you guys a little bit. They're just like, oh, you might've seen those jerks outside. But like, they didn't talk to any of us directly about you. And I was like, okay. So then one of the people who was in the room was my roommate. It was like five girls and two guys. Like, there's a lot of people in a big group house in Ithaca. And she was one of my roommates. I wasn't super close to her, but we did live in the same house. And so a couple days later, I ran into her in the kitchen, and she was like, Brady, I have a crazy story to tell you. And I said, okay. And because I didn't know that she was going to, like, it was just, I wasn't super tight with her. I was just like, oh, hey, I guess you're going to this. Well, here's a flyer for you. I didn't know she was doing it. But she goes in and does the whole thing. And then the CIA did background checks on everybody and did interviews with them. And they knew that was going on even before the background checks had started before they sat down with anyone, because they were there the first night to do the presentation. And they did interviews the whole next day. So my roommate said, here's my crazy story. I did my interview with the CIA today. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. Well, that's cool. And she was like, yeah, but check this out. They're doing these background checks on us. So I felt like it was important for me to be transparent. So I walked into the room and said, hey, listen, just so you know, I'm not super tight with him or anything, but the guy who was handing out those flyers before the event, I live in the same house as he does. I didn't know he was doing that. He didn't know I was going, but just so you know, like, he's my roommate. And she told me, she was very confident that she never had said my name up to that point. But when she did it, and she was interviewed, I think, with that woman, the woman with the funky hair, the woman said, oh, you mean Brady Russell? And she was like, yep, that's his name. She was like, yeah, no, I mean, we know who he is. If anything weird happens while we're here, we'll definitely check into him, but it's fine. You know, we understand people live with people. It's not a big deal. And so like, and that's all the more that ever came of it. You know, I wrote the story up in the paper, and I sent it to a journalist who writes about the CIA all the time, but they had to have found out my name through some sort of creepy spy shit. You know, like, they had to have taken a photo or taken a fingerprint, because none of the people who knew me, I checked with all of them, no one was asked, like, do you know that guy? So I've been creepily assessed by spies.
And well, now we know why you changed your last name. Yeah. It makes so much sense now.
They'll find you now. Well, they could have also just looked to see who your roommate was, because when my brother joined the military, his old roommates got phone calls. Mm-hmm. And he didn't list everyone he ever lived with. For some reason, they didn't call me. Like, they knew I would yell at them or something. But
yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been that. I mean, like, they were just they could have taken photos outside of everyone's house and just been like, oh, that happens to be the
or
dude
looked at, like, a lease.
But they would have had to have my, they didn't have my name. Like, how would they, if they looked at a lease, they would see six names on it, but it wouldn't mean they would know that it was me.
They might know.
This is Hillary.
They have their ways.
This is Hillary, just for those out there in podcast land. But they don't need your name. My friend dated the son of the former head of the CIA and found out a couple months into dating that a complete background check had been done on her, including like following people around. Like, I probably was followed at one point because I was her friend. So they can just follow you. You were probably just had someone creepily like it, around the corner the whole time.
And maybe before they come to a campus, they just kind of check out all the Hellraisers. And I was definitely like, you know, one of the most well-known prominent.
Especially if you were writing in the paper and stuff. If you were writing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. And that was, I mean, my weekly column was like liberal rant of the week from Brady, like, you know. So, yeah, no, definitely. So here's just the quick ending of the story, and this really wraps it up, and it's a little bit of a letdown at the end. But a few years after I got out of college, I looked into Freedom of Information Act requests, and you know, like if you have an FBI file, you can file a FOIA, and they're supposed to show you everything that they know about you, and so it's pretty easy to do. I read about how to do it, and so I filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, on myself, just thinking, well, somebody in the government seems to know who I am, so I just want to see what they know about me. And, you know, I thought this was fucked up at the end, but I got a letter back saying that I don't have any kind of record with the government at all. And I was like, I think I do somewhere.
But you still have your program from college, and I feel like that show and tell is enough to know what a badass you were.
Exactly.
Yeah. That you're talking about, this was what, in like 1997, maybe?
Been 98 or 99.
It's funny to talk about like how just that like weird lack of privacy that like you have no idea how these people knew about you, and I feel like that like as like our culture moves the way it's moving, I feel like that lack of privacy, which was, I feel like at one point something that people would have found horrible, I feel like we've all just lined up to give away our privacy now. I feel like I remember, like, you know, being younger, like reading 1984 or, you know, seeing science fiction movies or whatever, and there being this horrible future where the government was going to take away all of your privacy and all your thoughts were going to be public and everything, you know, almost everything you did was going to be public. And I think it's funny that kind of happened, but the government didn't necessarily do that to us. We all just like lined up to give it away.
Right.
You know, I feel like we're all like just completely living in public and like intentionally ensuring that none of us have any and do or say anything that isn't just broadcast to the entire world.
All right. So do other folks around the table have stories of weird or scary brushes with authority?
This is Jamie. I went through a 10th grade manifesto writing phase where I would write manifestos during my study hall, print out like 25 copies and put them up on strangers' lockers. And so obviously I got called into the guidance counselor to make sure everything was okay with me. And then I said, yeah, it's fine. I just had some thoughts because I was 15 and a jerk. And then they're like, okay, all right, you just keep, cause I didn't get in any real trouble at the time and I was fairly well behaved. And so then I just got a reputation for being the weird manifesto girl.
I love manifestos, and I will just say, as a piece of recommended reading, everyone should go to Project Gutenberg and check out the Unabomber manifesto, because he's not an admirable guy, but it is worthwhile reading.
This is Hillary, and for a moment, I thought you were going to tell everyone to check out Project Runway, and I was going to be totally on board. I had a run-in with the law in Japan. I was accused of being a terrorist, for reals, guys, and it's a part of a longer story, but basically, it drove me to tears, which made the police officer very uncomfortable, and he bowed backwards outside of my door until he could find the next foreigner to accuse of being a terrorist. More on that sometime in the future.
Members of Al-Qaeda are writing this down. Break down in tears. Break down in tears.
Get blonde girl to cry. Win war.
This is TJ. All my interactions with authority figures were very like lame suburban teenager type. I grew up a skateboarder, So I was constantly interacting with very bored and angry police officers. Who we would go skateboarding in like other towns around my town. And the one thing that I think is funny about these situations over and over again was that the cops every single time, regardless of like where we were, said the same thing. They'd pull up, they'd be like, "Let's see IDs." We weren't supposed to be skateboarding everywhere. We'd give them our IDs and they would be like, they would see the, you know, my ID said Doylestown, and they'd be like, "They don't have parking lots in Doylestown?" That's like that's a classic cop joke. "What are you doing here? What are we doing here? You don't have parking lots where you're from?" So those were all my brushes with the cop. Very, very lame.
Nice. All right. So thanks, everyone, for listening this week. As a reminder, the folks who've been on this show is me. You can find me on Twitter at Brady Dale. Jamie Fontaine, who's also on there at Jamie Fontaine. Hillary Ray, who's breaking up the name monotony with at Crush Comedy. And Timothy J. Hurley, TJ Hurley, who you can find at Timothy J. Hurley on Twitter. Thanks a ton for tuning in, and here is a reason to join us next week.
The topic was like deranged Vietnam veteran. That was like every episode of Dragnet had a deranged, like every episode of Hawaii 5-0 had like, "Oh, there's a deranged Vietnam vet in the bell tower," you know? So it was like, that was like a trope almost. Everyone knew the deranged Vietnam vet. So this guy was.